The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
The humanity of the priest is a bridge to encountering Christ and should not be a barrier. People always say, like, well, if you weren't a priest, what would you be doing? And I'm like, it's hard for me to think of anything other than what I'm doing.
That's what we're striving to discern, is what is God's plan, his dream, his will, his desire for me, where I'm going to be most fulfilled. And it really is through living a sacramental life that is absolutely going to support that.
When you're married, you have to realize it's not just you anymore. It's you and your wife and God.
If you desire to be truly happy, then your life should not be about you.
Welcome to God Calling, our locally produced program that explores the various vocations available to Catholics in all walks of life. Now, here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Well, thanks once again for joining us on God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski. Our guests today are Phil and Maria Wankata. Welcome to God Calling, folks.
Thank you for having us.
Obviously, your vocation is marriage. Maria, tell us where you grew up.
So, I grew up in Cleveland in the old Brooklyn area. Went to St. Rocco School and been parishioners there for forever. My mom was the school secretary, then parish secretary, and just always been involved in the parish and Beaumont High School.
Did you ever climb the grease pole?
I have not, but I've seen it many times.
So you went to Beaumont.
Mm-hmm.
What about after that?
Wheeling Jesuit University. So down in Wheeling, West Virginia. I actually transferred there my sophomore year. I'm the oldest of three girls and transferred there when my sister Carol, who was right behind me, decided to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were roommates together.
How important was the Catholic upbringing and education? What was it like in your home?
So, very, very Catholic family, I would say. My mom actually converted when she met my dad. So she became Catholic before they were married. And my dad's very, very devout Catholic. So, like, on the way to church, we would always pray the rosary, prayer before meals, before bedtime. Basically, just very, very involved in within the parish. It was a community, so we were taught to be active in the parish. Mm-hmm. So we were altar servers. My three sisters, we would always, like, over the summer, we would do all the funerals and stuff, and then weddings. Weddings were always fun. Weddings were better than funerals.
Yeah, because you got paid.
Yeah,
but at least in my parish, right? Of course, I'm so old; it was $2. So.
Yeah, but then in high school, became a Eucharistic minister and lectored, and that has just always been a part of my life.
Mm-hmm. Traditional upbringing, but you're a lot younger than I am, so maybe you got the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
A lot of people today don't do all that.
Yeah, and I think being at an Italian parish, there was the social aspect of it, so like the parish festival and the good food, and there were, you know, just always the older members of the parish, like it was a family. So you felt like you were being raised by the community there.
Mm-hmm. I went to a St. Anthony's, so yeah. I don't look it, but I'm half Italian. A friend of mine made a joke the other day. The gospel the other day was about Jesus healing Peter's mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And she got up and the first thing they did was started cooking. So my friend said she must have been Italian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Phil, go ahead.
I was just going to say the other thing, like my sisters and I, we also like volunteered in the the rectory, like answering the phones after mm-hmm. school. So like being around the priests there, like the Italian priests, they were really spiritual fathers as well. So I think just again, like that part of community and family and the upbringing there, you were emotionally tied.
Mm-hmm. Phil, where'd you grow up?
So I'm also born and raised in Cleveland, cradle Catholic. I went to St. Joseph and John in Strongsville,
mm-hmm.
Lived in Middlework Heights. So that's where we finished grade school. Like Maria, my two brothers and I, we had a complete monopoly on the weddings at St. Joseph in the mid to late 90s. So went to high school at St. Ignatius, graduating class of 2000, and then did my undergrad at John Carroll University. Mm-hmm. So similar upbringing as Maria. We didn't pray the rosary every Sunday on the way to church because it was a 5-minute drive. But we did, you know, attended weekday or sorry, weekend masses. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing I remember just growing up is I used to have to dress up real nice. And, you know, when I was in fifth grade, sixth grade, it was not the popular thing to do. So Easter Sunday, I'm in a suit and all my friends are not. And I was totally self-conscious of that growing up. But then that kind of evolved, right? So in high school times, you know, we did a lot of retreats. And that, I think, is when I started to mature, you know, more in my faith. And then in college, I would say it was maintenance mode, right? Where I started to branch off on my own instead of family masses. I'm going to mass on my own on Sundays. And then that kind of led to when I met Maria shortly after college.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you talk about branching off on your own. At that point in time, that's when a lot of people branch off, and that's the last year.
Yeah.
You see them until maybe they get married or start to have a family, and then it's kind of back to the church. But that's a critical period. I'm not sure that we do the best job necessarily at reaching out to those folks all the time.
Yeah, I think, and even like Phil was saying, like you do it out of habit, not really understanding the why. But, you know, I think we try to do that with our kids now, teaching them the why. But in as a young adult, you're finding yourself what works for you. But I think just because of that upbringing, there was that, I don't want to say sense of obligation, but like, I'm supposed to be doing this and there's a reason why I might not understand yet, but there's a good reason
why. That's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned your family. How many kids do you have?
We have two. We have a daughter who's 14 and a son who's almost 13. They're 19 months apart.
Oh, wow. Where'd you guys meet, Phil?
Well, so there could be a long story and a short story. I'll stick with the shorter version. So we actually met at just a friend's party on Memorial Day in 2005. It took though quite a bit of time for us to grow closer together. So we grew closer together playing softball from the fall of 2005. And then we started dating in 2006, and I was on a year off of softball while I was trying to get into the family softball team when we first started dating. Maria was playing co-ed with her on her father's team. And so then I started playing softball on that team, and that's really where our relationship kind of blossomed, I think, is on the ball field. And then, of course, we would, you know, hang out after some of the games and chat. And then during work, this was before we were dating, we would always email exchange each other. So mm-hmm. we would have a conversation. This is, you know, now they have all kinds of apps and things.
Oh, yeah.
But this was even prior to, like, text messages. We were emailing because we were both at our computers. So that's kind of how we got together.
Maria, yeah. Do you ever wonder what's taking this guy so long?
Well, I was dating somebody else at the time as our friendship grew, but that relationship ended, and once it ended, Phil was right there.
Ah, yeah, opportunist. I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like it. I've told the story many times, but my wife turned me down three times to use a softball analogy.
Yeah.
I took a chance at strike four, and there we go.
Yeah, hit a home run.
Oh, that's awesome. 46 years later. Yeah, a long time. That's for sure. Saint Kim, they call her. I don't know. I haven't figured that out why yet. But, in any case, guys, stay with us on God Calling. This is God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to God Calling. This is Paul Orlowski with Phil and Maria Wincata. Maria, you talked about starting to date. Where'd you go on your first date? Obviously, you had the softball connection.
Yeah, so we had the softball connection, but our first date, we went to Cheesecake Factory at Crocker Park.
Oh, and then not far from me.
Yeah, and then I think we went back to, you were living with your parents. We went back and I met your mom and your dad. And your mom, I don't know if she was too sure about me at the time, but then I think shortly after that, we started attending Mass together right away. So mm-hmm. we went to Mary Queen of the Apostles in Brook Park.
Yeah.
At
the time, I think it was, I forget the name of the.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of changes, that's for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, they changed names. But yeah, it was on in Brook Park near the airport.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, I took you to St. Rocco's, and that was
sealed the deal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you climb the pole?
No, I have not. I've been asked multiple times, but no, I haven't. But we attend that festival regularly. Actually, I'm the chairperson of the festival at St. Rocco's. So,
oh, boy.
I get close action with the
pole. Yeah, exactly. Heading up something like that, it's a joy in a lot of ways. But I did a lot of booster club stuff years ago in Bay Village, and if I had one more person come up and say, you know, next year you ought to. And you're nodding, Phil. You get it.
Well, it's an honor, too. I mean, Maria tells the story of shortly after we went to St. Rocco's. I mean, I remember Father James, hopefully he doesn't get mad at me when I say this, but I was a freshman in high school. I used to take the school bus, Berea City school bus, to St. Ignatius, and I didn't even know St. Rocco's.
Okay.
And I remember we would go on Fulton Road, and I saw the big banner, St. Rocco's Festival, and I thought to myself, I remember this vividly. I said, "Who does anybody even go to St. Rocco's? I don't know if anybody goes to this church." And, you know, so then 3, 4, 5 years go by, and, you know, I meet Maria, and we start going to St. Rocco's, and I was just completely blown away at the beauty inside the church. The parishioners there are just fantastic people. And so then that grew, for me at least, to where St. Rocco's is our home parish. It's where Maria grew up. It's now where we were married. All of our kids' sacraments have been there. Our son still has confirmation to go, but our nieces and nephews, their baptisms have been there. It's a family, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Maria, how important is that sharing that St. Rocco's? He immediately, it sounds like, fell in love with the place.
Yeah.
And then when does he pop the question?
Well, so we started dating June 2006, and then August 2007, we were engaged. He popped the question. But I think we knew fairly early on. I mean, we both had dated other people previously, and we had a lot of shared interests, softball, our faith, our families. We had very similar upbringing. There were things, advice my dad had always given me that was playing in my head, and it was like, this is the guy. And we talked about it early on, about how we would want our relationship and marriage to be. So kind of all of those things were settled, and we discussed fairly early up front. My sister was engaged as well, so she was married May 2008, and we were just a few short months behind her. So your brother as well, yeah, Andy and Aubrey. So we were all getting married around the same around the same time, but it was the easiest decision I've ever made.
Now, you work in the Cleveland Diocese Office of Marriage and Family,
yeah,
and you have a very sensible approach to deciding if you're going to make this lifelong commitment.
Yeah,
do you have to slow kids down these days? If somebody comes for advice, what types of advice do you give them?
I work very closely with our youth and young adult ministries as well. And a lot of the youth ministers are now, and even young adult, are asking for like dating discernment programs and things like that, because what they see with kids a lot is like they're jumping into like these exclusive relationships right away. I really think like with our culture and young people in general, it's like listening to God's voice and how he's calling you to use your gifts and talents. Like, yes, it's a decision, but it's also something you work through with God and keeping Christ at the center of it, because that's your first and foremost important relationship. And then, you know, entering into this commitment with someone else is God calling you to that. So not so much that you're in control, but having God in control, and is it his will? So different ways to hear and discern that, I think, is really important for our young people.
In the office, some stuff that I looked up said the office kind of deals with chastity, fidelity awareness, human sexuality, gender, pornography even, LGBTQ, yeah, all that stuff.
And yeah, these
kids are, even from the 90s when you guys met, these kids are dealing with a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, well, full disclosure, two of the men I dated before Phil, that pornography was a real problem for them, and actually was the end of our relationship. And actually, I think on our first or second date, I asked Phil if he had that problem or not. And
ask it up front.
Yeah, because I was not allowing myself to get in that type of situation again. And luckily, he gave the right answer. But yeah, really, and like I said, with our young people, it's teaching the foundation of what it means to be a human person, what that call to love is, how you can give yourself in love in many different ways. And living that out in our masculinity and femininity is very, very important.
Now, Phil, you answered that question correctly, but I noticed something else that might have been a big attraction here. You were the RBI leader. You also led the league in hits for the Southside Sabres.
This is public on the website, I know. It's, you know, not too many sports facts are out there, but that's an important one. But this was, that was a lot of fun. Actually, this was the first year that the diocese did that. And, you know, we didn't, Maria and I said, we took a couple of years off. The last time we played co-ed was in during COVID in 2020. So we took a couple of years off because the kids were getting old and they have their own sports and their own activities. So it was a pretty big strain on us from a scheduling standpoint. But the opportunity came. It was just Sunday afternoons for an hour, you know, so we just joined a team and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a really great experience getting back into it. And we've already started talking about, hey, what other friends can we, you know, I'd like to look at it as a chance to evangelize, even our non-Catholic friends coming in and meeting new people, having them be a part of the team and watching that league grow. Because I don't know, you know, softball in Cleveland, it's a pretty close-knit and pretty intense, you know, depending upon where you're at. And this was just a break from it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But you also want to see that type of activity grow. And there was a lot of young adults that played, a lot of people that haven't played before, and just the mesh and of those two groups, the league was a blast. So,
yeah. Guys, stay with us. You're listening to God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock. I'm Paul Orlowski. Back right after these messages. Welcome back to God Calling. Phil and Maria Wankata joining us. Now, Phil, you had some job challenges, I would guess, judging from your job. You were doing a lot of stuff with at work, supply chain stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And that had to be a nightmare.
You know, certainly it was challenging. I think what it exposed is, at least for us, it was a situation where we weren't fully prepared. And I don't know if anybody was fully prepared, because when you look at COVID, right, the world sort of stopped.
Yep.
But not for us in one of our businesses, because we were in hand sanitizer and things. So we had a particular piece that was volume was going crazy, and we had to be very agile to organize ourselves in order to produce the right products to get things out as fast as we could. But the rest of the businesses were slowing to a halt. And then the summer of 2020 happened and things started coming back. But the supply chain, the global supply chains weren't ready for that. And so you had just massive imbalance, and not to get into too many details, but you didn't have containers, you didn't have ships, you had congestion all over the place. And so when the whole system was disrupted, it caused a lot of problems. And, you know, so your reaction was, we built a lot of inventory, and now we're starting to see some of it again with the situation in the Red Sea. Shipments, you know, we're struggling to get things on time from Europe to China because we have to go around Africa. So over the last 4 years, I've learned to be very agile.
How does your faith affect that? It's going to be better.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. It's going to be better. It's tested a lot of patience, you know, and it's not like, hey, let's God's in control, but it is in a way, you know, I often think about there's people involved in this. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a leader of those people. So my behavior and my patience and my calmness are a huge factor. And so I've learned to focus on being clear and concise with the information, but also be compassionate and think about this is a human person on the other end that I'm talking to, even though the situation might be tense. Right. You want to treat others like you want to be treated. I would say when I was less mature in my career a long time ago, I was very reactive and emotional. And certainly over the past 4 or 5 years with all the disruptions and things, I've learned a lot of patience and I've learned a lot of compassion with my team, but also with people that support us, vendors, suppliers, things like that. So,
yeah, I can see why you like this guy. We're going to tell COVID. Big problems, can't take the kids to church for quite some time there. And how did you handle it as a mom?
So actually, COVID strengthened our faith and our family's practice. I had always worked remote, and I was in sales and sales training at the time, working from home, but the kids were home, Phil was home. I'd say one of the best things is that the diocese started live streaming masses, and so every night we would go on and we would watch mass.
You could sample a lot of parishes, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the use of technology really helped us, and we built up a family practice that once things started to return to normal, we didn't want to give up. We were never daily mass goers before, and COVID turned us into daily mass goers.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the internet and all that sorts of things, with more people on, a lot more surfing going on, and particularly younger people, and there's so much negative. There's some great stuff out there, masses, and all kinds of podcasts, Catholic podcasts and others, but there's a lot of bad out there.
I think it was around fifth grade, our kids turned 12. We did get them smartphones, but we use, I monitor them heavily. So we use the screen time, the parental controls. I have a VPN software, Canopy, downloaded on them so that they can't get to sites and stuff that they don't want to. They turn their phones and devices in at night into our rooms. That's something they try to slip past us sometimes, but I'm very strict about it.
Maybe she'll forget.
Yeah, we do phone checks. I don't let them download apps. Social media, our daughter is on social media, but we watch who she follows, and there's a limit on it, so it shuts down when she can't. But yeah, there are good things out there. She plays soccer, so we have her follow soccer accounts. She follows all the faith stuff I ask her to follow. But then, you know, she uses it for social purposes too. So it's a balancing act. You don't want, in my opinion, you don't want to completely deprive them of it, because being social with their friends is a very important part of this time. And so to feel excluded or isolated, it can be very harming as well. But it's the balance of it. You got to check the phones, and you got to use the software and stuff that's out there to protect them.
Yeah, it's got to be tough being a parent of a preteen these days.
Yeah, Maria speaks of it very, very well, but it is hard. You know, our son had, we had upgraded phones last year, but you know, we forgot that he still had his old phone. So then we found out he had a backup. So he was using a backup that he had all the apps on.
I like that kid.
Yeah, he found his way around, you know. So now the backup's sitting in my office, and it thankfully hasn't moved in 2 months. But there's a lot of things. I think, you know, we're relatively young parents, but we don't know the half of anything. And keeping up with things, you know, our daughter just said, you know, she had a school dance, and she went with a boy, very nice boy. They were talking about Valentine's Day. I said, well, why don't you text him? You know, maybe you guys can go to the movies or something, so you can get to know each other. And she goes, well, I don't have his phone number. They're on one of the other apps. And I said, oh, well, why don't you ask him for his Gmail then? And you guys can email, you know. And she gave me the look like, hey, yep, you dinosaur, get yep out of here. But it's hard to keep up with all of that. So, you know, we try our best, but it is very difficult. And it's very, as you said, Paul, it's very dangerous.
Yep.
There's a lot of bad things that are out there. And you got to find that balance between letting them, you know, learn on their own, but also protecting them.
I'll end with a funny story. A buddy of mine is a retired FBI guy, and he's had teenage daughters. And I need a phone. No, you're not getting a phone until certain, whatever the age was. We're getting a phone. I what if something happens? All the arguments that the kids give parents these days about why they need a cell phone. She goes, all right, fine. I'm going to get you a flip phone. She goes, no, that's worse than no phone at all. I guess it's like kids would make fun of you if you had a flip phone.
We threaten it all the time. Their grandfather, Papa Lenny, has a flip phone. He refuses, and we say, one more strike and you're getting the flip phone. So, yeah. Yep.
That's delightful. Guys, thanks for joining us on God Calling. This is Paul Orlowski with Phil and Maria Wancata. We hope you'll join us each and every week at this very same time right here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio.
Thank you for listening to God Calling. If you missed part of today's show, or you just want to hear it again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab. And remember, wherever you are in life, God is calling you.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.